Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Infectious Diseases. This podcast aims to look at the key considerations for optimizing the management of patients with nontuberculous mycobacterial lung disease, or NTM lung disease, in order to improve outcomes. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from InSmed. In this first section, Professor Doreen Adrizzo-Harris and Dr. Ashwin Basavaraj respond to questions and provide their expert insights on how to reduce diagnostic delays and the initiation of guideline-based treatment for patients with NTM lung disease.
Hello, and welcome to this touch-in conversation activity. My name is Dr. Ashwin Basavaraj, and I'm an assistant professor of medicine at NYU Grossman School of Medicine in New York, and section chief of pulmonary critical care and sleep medicine at Bellevue Hospital Center, also located in New York. I'm joined today by my esteemed colleague, Dr. Doreen Adrizzo-Harris, who is a professor of medicine, director of our bronchiectasis program at NYU Grossman School of Medicine in New York. Welcome, Doreen.
Thank you.
Together, we will have a conversation around the approaches to reduce time to diagnosis and initiation of guideline-based treatment for patients with NTM lung disease. Our first conversation is going to be about approaches to reduce time to diagnosis and initiation of guideline-based treatment. NTM lung disease is the most common clinical manifestation of NTM infection that can lead to a chronic, debilitating disease. Up to 85% of NTM lung disease cases are caused by Mycobacterium avium complex, or MAC. There's a number of risk factors for NTM lung disease, and they can be broken down into environmental risk factors, host risk factors, genetic, immunologic, and host susceptible phenotype risk factors. For environmental risk factors, there could be a number of sources, most commonly water, soil, and dust. For host risk factors, there could be structural lung disease, most commonly bronchiectasis, as well as COPD. For genetic risk factors, there's cystic fibrosis, alpha-1 antitrypsin deficiency, and primary ciliary dyskinesia. Immunologic risk factors include immunosuppressive exposures such as steroids, biologic therapies, and a number of conditions such as HIV. And for host-susceptible phenotypes, there can be a number of presentations such as tall, slender body habitus, pectus excavatum, mitral valve prolapse, and others. And there's nonspecific symptoms associated with NTM lung disease, most commonly cough, fatigue, but there also could be shortness of breath, excessive mucus production, fever, coughing up blood, night sweats, and weight loss. So there's a number of challenges associated with NTM lung disease. We know that NTM lung disease is increasing in prevalence and incidence in the US. And there's a number of reasons why it's increasing in incidence and prevalence. The population is aging. Diagnostic capabilities improving and the clinical suspicions increasing. For incidence, for over 2008 to 2015, there's been about a 5% increase in incidence and about a 7% increase in prevalence over a number of years. With this, there's a number of diagnostic challenges associated with NTM lung disease. We know that the symptoms are nonspecific, and there could be overlapping features with other lung diseases, such as bronchiectasis and COPD. And the time to diagnose NTM lung disease can be months, up to 20 months. And there could be delays in diagnosis that can lead to worsening symptoms, a decrease in social and physical functioning, a decline in mental health, and inappropriate management of the disease. So Dr. Adrizzo-Harris, let's look at some questions submitted by our audience on the key symptoms and diagnostic challenges associated with NTM lung disease. Our first question is, in your clinical experience, what are the key signs to look out for when suspecting NTM lung disease, especially in patients who have chronic respiratory symptoms and are polymedicated? Are there any tools to distinguish NTM lung disease from other pulmonary conditions?
Well, that's a great question. So many of the patients will come to you to be evaluated after having chronic cough for many years, and many of them already have a diagnosis. So some of the similar diagnoses are COPD, chronic bronchitis, chronic asthma, and it's very difficult to distinguish between those diseases and underlying NTM lung disease. Often, if you do pulmonary function testing in these groups of patients, you will find obstructive dysfunction. And so that does not really help differentiate the patients. The things that are extremely important would be to get sputum analysis in these patients early on. Even if they're not very productive, you can do induced sputums to get adequate sputum samples. And then look for bacterial pathogens, NTM pathogens, and fungal pathogens. Often patients who have underlying NTM also have other bacterial pathogens such as Pseudomonas or Staphylococcus aureus. So that would clue you in to start thinking about NTM as a diagnosis. The other important thing to realize is that chest x-ray alone is often not sufficient to diagnose the bronchiectasis or bronchiolitis that's often associated with NTM lung disease. So yeah, really have to think that if a patient has a normal chest x-ray, you want to get a chest CT scan early on in their workup.
Great. Our second question here is, if a clinician suspects NTM lung disease, what specific diagnostic pathway should be followed and what tools should be used to confirm the diagnosis? How important is it to identify the species of NTM?
Well, it's extremely important, based on the guidelines that came out for NTM lung disease in 2020, that you have the three key aspects of disease, both a clinical picture that is sufficient to make the diagnosis, as you said, chronic cough, fatigue, dyspnea on exertion. You must have radiographic findings. Most commonly, those are found on CAT scan, as we said, of the chest with either bronchiectasis and nodular disease, which we call bronchiolitis, or tree and bud, and or cavitary disease. And then you must have sputum cultures, either two sputums that produce the same NTM species or a bronchoscopy specimen that grows an NTM species. Those three things together give you a diagnosis of NTM lung disease. And it's extremely important to get the species. So just having AFB on a specimen that's seen under smear without having growth won't really help you in treating the patient. You need to know if you're dealing with Mycobacterium avium complex, as you suggested, or some of the other more common rapid growers that we have, such as Mycobacterium abscessus or Mycobacterium chelonii. Important to differentiate the species and make sure that you have multiple cultures of the same species.
Great. And our question here, our third question is, I would like to reduce the time to diagnosis for my patients with NTM lung disease, but find it difficult with so many diagnostic challenges. How do you approach these specific challenges to avoid diagnostic delay in your patients?
So as we said earlier, the important things to make a diagnosis of NTM lung disease, the two most important things are getting sputum analysis early, particularly sent for AFB, acid fast smears and cultures. And the second is getting a chest CT scan early on in the workup. If a chest x-ray is normal. So those things need to be done early. As you said, 20 months was the median time for diagnosis. We often have patients where it's 2 or 3 or 4 years. And one of the things that might prevent a patient from getting diagnosed early is if they're not producing sputum on their own. So trying to induce that sputum, as we said, in a clinical setting with nebulized saline to get a good sample is often very helpful to make the diagnosis early.
So a couple of key points for this section. We know that NTM lung disease is increasing in incidence and prevalence. There's a number of risk factors for NTM lung disease, and the symptoms are nonspecific. There's a delay in diagnosis of NTM, and we want to reduce the time to delay of diagnosis. And there's a few ways for that. Getting your sputums early, getting a CAT scan, and trying to identify the exact species of NTM so we can treat it appropriately and try to reduce any sort of impact on health.
In this second section, Professor Doreen Adrizzo-Harris and Dr. Ashwin Basavaraj respond to questions and provide their expert insights on setting individualized treatment goals for patients with NTM lung disease.
So for our next conversation, we're going to be talking about the setting of individualized treatment goals in collaboration with patients. So when we talk about this, there's a number of recommended treatment regimens for macrolide-susceptible MAC and NTM lung disease. And it's important to categorize the NTM lung disease to identify appropriate treatment. There's nodular bronchiectatic, or the mild to moderate form of NTM without the presence of cavities. There's cavitary NTM. And then there's refractory NTM that's not responding to standard guideline-based treatment. For nodular bronchiectatic NTM, the recommended regimen is three drugs, azithromycin or clarithromycin, rifamycin, such as rifampin or rifabutin, and ethambutol. And these medications can be given three times a week based on the severity of the disease, or daily. And it's given for about 12 months after sputum culture conversion. For cavitary disease, again, we start with the same three drugs, plus or minus IV amikacin based on the severity of the disease. We normally do this every day for 12 months after culture conversion, and three times a week for the IV amikacin. For refractory NTM, which is normally defined as sputum cultures that are still positive after 6 months of guideline-based treatment, we continue the same three drugs, plus inhaled liposomal amikacin is an option for patients with refractory NTM. Again, these are given every day. Now let's look at some questions submitted by our audience on setting individualized treatment goals for patients with NTM lung disease. Our first question here, I have a 51-year-old male patient with GERD who was diagnosed with COPD when he was 45 years old. He was recently diagnosed with tuberculosis, and following two positive sputum cultures from two separate expectorated samples, he was also diagnosed with MAC. CAT scan imaging identified cavitary disease, showing cavities in multiple lobes. What do the guidelines say about when I should start antibiotic treatment, for how long, and what their treatment goals should be?
Well, this is a very complicated patient. He's relatively young with underlying COPD, as well as tuberculosis, and now has MAC lung disease because he has two positive sputums that are growing the same species. And he's got cavities in multiple lobes. So when I think about treating a patient like this, it's going to be, first of all, important to be treating his underlying tuberculosis that you told me he had. So we're going to want to treat that. But we're also going to need to treat his NTM lung disease, his MAC lung disease. And often that can be done while treating patients for tuberculosis because many of the drugs do overlap. But in a patient with cavitary disease, we don't know whether it's from TB or from his MAC. We would certainly want to start therapy in this patient. Often it's difficult in patients to decide who to treat and who not to treat. But when you've got cavitary disease and a patient who's young with underlying other pulmonary comorbidities, those are patients that we're going to want to treat. So we would certainly start with the daily therapy regimen that you recommended, a macrolide, ethambutol, and a rifamycin. And usually the ethambutol and the rifamycin will be part of his TB treatment. And we would seriously consider adding intravenous amikacin, at least for the first 2 to 3 months in this patient. And that's based on the new guidelines that came out in 2020. And the majority of patients will need to be on meds beyond 12 months. 15 to 18 months is likely the standard for MAC lung disease because we want to achieve at least 12 months of treatment after sputum conversion, which usually takes several months to occur. So treatment goals need to be set with your patient up front, right when you're starting therapy. And what are those treatment goals that I discuss with my patients? The first thing is we're going to want to be monitoring how they're feeling and what their clinical symptoms are. So the goal is that we want to improve their symptoms without causing side effects from the medication profile. And our other goals will be to improve their CAT scan, as well as hopefully get culture conversion. So the patients are aware of these three main things, and we'll work together doing that as a team.
Great. Our second question here. In your clinical experience, what practical and evidence-based recommendations should be followed when choosing a treatment plan with patients with NTM lung disease? Do you have any advice on how to set achievable treatment goals in collaboration with your patients, and how frequently the goals should be reviewed?
So once again, and we'll hear this, me say this multiple times, the 2020 guidelines on NTM lung disease are extremely helpful, and they go through many different species. So they give guidelines for MAC and for Mycobacterium abscessus, Mycobacterium kansasi, Mycobacterium sinope. So important to identify what species you're dealing with. And then, as we said, determine who to treat. So if you have a patient who has underlying risk factors, progressive CAT scan, significant symptoms, that's pretty straightforward. You're going to want to treat that patient. You might want to treat someone who's got very heavy burden of disease, positive smears, rapid growers are going to progress more rapidly. So once you decide on treatment, then you're going to want to really sit down with your patient and take some time to explain all that goes into treatment. As you know, most of our patients first get started on airway clearance, which is extremely important, setting up an airway clearance regimen. And then we like to sit down and discuss the multiple medications that they're going to be on. Most patients are going to be on a minimum of 3 medications. So we will want to set treatment goals up front, what they should expect from these medications, and then how long they're going to need to be on them. And how frequently should the goals be reviewed? The treatment goals should be reviewed with your patient every time you see them. We will initially see patients monthly until they're on a stable regimen, and then we'll see them usually every 3 to 4 months. And so during those visits, are you going to want to go over their symptoms, any side effects they might be having from the meds, how their CAT scans are doing, which we usually get every 6 to 12 months, and then what's happening with their cultures. And you'll want to review that at every visit.
Great. And our third question here. Do the 2020 guidelines for the management of NTM lung disease define treatment success? And how can I monitor the success of a particular therapy? As a clinician, how will I know when a treatment regimen is failing? And are there further options available for refractory disease?
All right, so let's take that question into two parts. How do I monitor my patients to determine if they are succeeding or if we are succeeding in their treatment plan? So we're going to want to monitor sputum cultures for AFB very frequently, every 1 to 2 months. And if you do that, you'll be able to determine when their sputums convert. And then from that point, you're going to want to start counting months because you're going to want to have 12 months of therapy while they have been negative. When we get a patient that has refractory lung disease and not responding, as Dr. Basavaraju said earlier, at 6 months, they're still positive sputum cultures, that's when we're going to start to think about several other things. We would have initially gotten a sensitivity testing on many of these patients, so we want to make sure we might repeat it at 6 months, make sure they're still macrolide and macrolide sensitive. And then we will want to think about adding therapies. There is one FDA-approved medication for patients with recalcitrant disease, which is amikacin liposomal suspension, or therapy, and that is one option. But there are multiple other medication options, off-label use, that we can try. And some of those medications include clofazimine, include the oxaliplatins, linezolid or tadalafil, and even bedaquiline has been used in patients who don't have any other options for therapy.
Great. So in this section, we talked about the different presentations of NTM lung disease, nodular bronchiectatic, cavitary, and refractory NTM, the importance of treating them appropriately based on the presentation of NTM lung disease, and some treatment options. So for example, guideline-based therapy and some second and third line treatment options that are off-label but are important to consider if patients are recalcitrant for their disease.
And it's important to monitor the therapy you're giving them. So if you start 3 times a week therapy and they're not converting, you can go to daily therapy. That's one option. As you said, for cavitary disease, if you start with just daily triple meds, then and you're not seeing the response you want, you can always add on therapy, add on intravenous amikacin. So the most important thing here is to be following your patient clinically and closely every 1 to 2 months while they're in the beginnings of treatment for their disease.
great.
In this final section, Professor Doreen Adrizzo-Harris and Dr. Ashwin Basavaraj respond to questions and provide their expert insights on how to optimize outcomes for patients with NTM lung disease, including the management of drug-related side effects.
So for this conversation, we're going to be talking about improving efficacy and decreasing drug-related toxicity. And with that, we're going to highlight a number of medications that are often used in patients with NTM lung disease and associated adverse reactions. So for example, inhaled liposomal amikacin, or ALIS, can have a number of side effects to monitor for, most commonly dysphonia. And in the CONVERT study, up to 50% of patients presented with dysphonia after use. But after 1 month of therapy, most of the side effects did resolve on ALIS. There's also cough, shortness of breath, hearing issues, renal issues, although rare, should be monitored for when a patient is on ALIS. There's also other forms of amikacin, such as the parenteral inhaled amikacin form, or intravenous amikacin, which we monitor hearing issues, nephrotoxicity, electrolyte disturbances, and vestibular issues. For ethambutol, we want to monitor for ocular toxicity and neuropathy. For macrolides, we normally monitor for GI side effects. We monitor for hearing loss, prolonged QTCs on an EKG, and liver issues. And for rifamycins, we want to make sure a patient is not presenting with cytopenias, hypersensitivity reactions, hepatotoxicity, and orange discoloration, although that's normally a normal response, meaning that the rifamycin is getting absorbed. And to monitor for these side effects, we often get blood work, at least monthly, and we also get a baseline hearing test and a baseline eye exam, and we want to monitor those hearing and eye exams at least every 3 months to make sure a patient is not presenting with adverse reactions. And some real-world treatment outcomes were reported. For example, in North America, there was a retrospective single-center review of patients, about close to 200 patients, completing more than 12 months of a macrolide-based NTM lung disease regimen. Sputum conversion in these patients occurred in over 80%, and treatment success, again, also over 80%. And no patients developed treatment resistance in this particular study. Treatment regimen modification occurred frequently with daily therapy as opposed to intermittent therapy. And about 9% of treatment episodes were discontinued prior to the 12 months of planned treatment due to medication intolerance, 1% due to macrolide intolerance. And another study in Europe, an observational retrospective study in patients of about 170 patients, and a median follow-up of about 31 months after, reported that side effects occurred in about 40% of patients, with treatment failure in about 4% of patients, and treatment discontinuation again in about 13% of patients. The median time to treatment discontinuation due to side effects was over 200 days after treatment initiation. And the main reason for discontinuation of treatment was due to drug intolerance. So with that, Dr. Adrizzo-Harris, let's look at some questions submitted by our audience on how to manage side effects for improved treatment outcomes in patients with NTM lung disease. Our first question, do I need to monitor for any specific side effects once treatment for NTM lung disease is initiated? And if so, what is the best practice for doing so? What do the 2020 guidelines for the treatment of NTM lung disease say about managing common or serious side effects of anti-NTM drugs?
So we do need to monitor for side effects. Based on the guidelines, though, that monitoring needs to be patient-specific based on the drugs that you're putting the patient on and their underlying comorbidities. So as you said, we will get baseline audiogram, baseline eye testing, baseline EKGs in pretty much all of the patients that we will be monitoring, as well as baseline routine lab work, a CBC, and a comprehensive metabolic panel. And then depending on the patient's underlying medical issues, we will determine how frequently. The guidelines are not specific in the timing. In my own clinical practice, I will usually get lab work monthly at the beginning, and And then if the patients don't have any issues, we'll move that out to every 3 months. As we said before, we'll get sputums every 1 to 2 months. And then audiograms and eye exams every 3 to 6 months, depending what medications they're on. If they're on intravenous amikacin, then we're going to do things much more frequently. And any other of the intravenous meds we might use for the rapid growers will usually be getting weekly labs and monthly audiograms because of those two areas of toxicity are the most important to monitor.
Great. Our second question here. I have a 60-year-old female patient who was diagnosed with MAC lung disease over 8 months ago. She has been receiving macrolide-containing triple therapy with add-on of ALIS as of 2 months ago due to continued positive sputum cultures. Over the past couple of months, she's developed a cough and shortness of breath. She's concerned that the ALIS treatment is exacerbating her respiratory symptoms, and she wants to stop taking her medication. How can I best manage these side effects and encourage my patient to continue with treatment? Or is there an alternative add-on treatment I should use?
So this is an interesting case. Patients often, when they're first started on ALIS treatment, will have difficulties with dysphonia. I believe you mentioned that earlier. It's very, very common. And cough can also be one of the side effects. Sometimes patients with underlying bronchospasm will have bronchospasm after they have the medication administered. There are some ways to get around that. You certainly can pre-medicate your patient with a short-acting beta agonist. And I often will, if a patient presents like this, it's not as common to present two months into therapy, but there are patients that do. The first thing I would do is I would hold the ALIS treatment. I would get a chest X-ray because you can get hypersensitivity pneumonitis with amikacin liposomal solution. And so I would want to make sure that we're not dealing with that and make sure the patient's clinically stable from our vital sign status and oximetry status. And if the chest X-ray is normal and her vital signs are all stable, I would go ahead and then restart the treatment with the short-acting bronchodilator and perhaps intermittent therapy the first week or two. It was FDA approved as a daily therapy, so we would try and get that back to daily. ALIS therapy is the only FDA-approved therapy we have right now for patients with recalcitrant disease, and its effectiveness was shown to be at 30% in producing culture conversion in patients who had many months or years of prior sputum culture positivity. So I would try to get the patient to tolerate the ALIS treatment if possible, and the durability in patients. Now we've got a study looking at durability in patients who had been on ALIS therapy, and the ALIS therapy patients had much longer durability compared to standard guideline based regimens. So we would try and get them to stay on ALIS. However, there are alternative drugs that I had mentioned in an earlier session, and you can consider off-label use of drugs such as clofazimine or bedaquiline, or you can also use the oxylenones tadalafil or linezolid.
Great. Our next question here. I struggle with discussing the side effects of NTM lung disease treatments with my patients, as I fear it may affect their adherence. What strategies do you use to educate patients on the potential side effects of therapy while also reinforcing the importance of adhering to the treatment plan to optimize outcomes?
So I think it's extremely important to educate your patient. They have to know what to look for, and there has to be very easy communication with their healthcare team so that when they do notice something that is different, they know they can call you. They should feel reassured that you're there, that you will be able to deal with it. I think it definitely takes away some of the fear, and they're also very anxious about having to be on these meds for more than 12 months. So I really do discuss the side effects often at every visit, and I try and make the patient feel comfortable that if we do have a side effect, stop the meds immediately, and the majority of side effects will abate on their own once we stop the medications. And we're also monitoring blood work very frequently, right, and audiograms. So if we see something early on, we will stop the meds and most of the side effects will go away. So patients can feel reassured. When I talk to the patients, I also educate them about some resources that are available. First of all, I want them to be empowered to write a list of questions that they want to ask me when they come to see me next, because they get anxious at times. So I tell them to keep a journal and then we'll go over each of their questions about their meds, about any symptoms they're having. But there are lots of resources out there that can provide them answers. Support groups. Many cities have NTM lung disease support groups. And there are other associations such as NTM-IR and the COPD Foundation and the CHESS Foundation that have lots of resources for patients. So I give my patients access to that information, and then they can get in touch with other patients who have the same issues that they're going through. And that often is extremely helpful getting them through the 12 plus months of therapy.
And our last question here, what treatment options are on the horizon for NTM lung disease? And how might these impact the future for my patients with NTM lung disease? In particular, are there any investigational treatments that are associated with fewer toxicities that may improve adherence in my patients?
So there are many drugs out there right now that are being tested in investigational trials. We've already talked about some of the repurposed antimicrobials that are off-label being used, bedaquiline and clofazimine, tidesulid, and one of the newer drugs, omadacycline, which is an oral form of IV tigecycline, has been used off-label. There are non-antimicrobial drugs that are out there. The hope is that with some of these non-antimicrobial therapies, there will be less toxicity. Some of those you may have heard of are inhaled nitric oxide therapy, inhaled gallium, inhaled GM-CSF, and even recombinant interleukin-7. And then there are some new antibiotics that are coming out that are potentially going to be less toxic to the patients and better tolerated. And some of those that are in investigational trials right now include apromycin, epetroborole, gyrase inhibitors, and inhaled version of clofazimine. So lots of work going on for the horizon. So the hope is that in a short period of time, we'll have some newer agents to use for our patients with less toxicity.
Great. So some key points here from this section is that it's important for patients to have monitoring when they're on their treatments with blood work, with eye exams, hearing exams, EKGs. There are a number of antibiotic regimens that are in the pipeline, which is very exciting for NTM lung disease, which hopefully will reduce some of the side effects that that may occur with standard NTM lung disease treatment. So with that, I want to thank everyone for joining our session today, and hopefully you learned a little bit more about NTM lung disease. Thank you, Dr. Idrissa Harris, for being here today.
Thank you, Dr. Basavaraj.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Infectious Diseases at www.touchinfectiousdiseases.com.